Blog Talk Radio.
Tiger, DJ South Events coming at you from a place called Durham, North Carolina. And this is Black by Color only on CNM Radio, where I will speak truth to the black nation. On this show, I will discuss current events and issues that affect the black race and take on the mainstream liberal black agenda. Hopefully you'll get something from this show, and if you have a question or a comment, make sure you season it well with respect, or you'll find yourself in danger of the curse of the fruit bat. So don't come here being a fruit bat, as this is a fruit bat-free program. You are listening to Black by Color Only. Well, hello everybody out there in Blog Talk Radio land. I hope you're able to hear me. I hope there's no echoes. We have no problems on my mics, on my mic. Last week when I came into the show, people were telling me that I was having an echo on my mic, and I'm hoping that's not the same thing today. If you're listening to me under the sound of my voice, just give me a go, no go in the chat room. Until then, I'll just keep on talking. If you would like to be a guest to call into the show, the call-in number is 646-478-5284. That's 646-478-5284. And when you call in, please be mindful of the aforementioned curse of the fruit bat. If you want to come in here and indulge in straw man arguments and character assassinations, ad hominem attacks, excessive profanity, or just coming in just to disrupt the show in any kind of way, trolling or anything like that, then you are a fruit bat and you will suffer the curse, which will be, you will be kicked off the show. I don't care if you agree with me or disagree with me. You know, we're not going to always agree on every point. We're not always going to agree with every point of view or whatever, but there's still a level of respect that we can show to one another in spite of our disagreements. I see you there, the four persons. Greetings to you, too. But I just want people to know that, you know, I want to foster respect on this program and not turn it into a heated argument or something like that, because no one gets a benefit from that. Now, you know, if you disagree with something, don't take it as an insult. Don't take it personal, because some people, they do that. And, you know, I don't understand why people feel like they got to take something personal because they disagree with you or something like that. You know, that's what's wrong with our world today. You know, so many people, you know, they got a point of view. And, yeah, debate doesn't have to be hostile. It doesn't have to be hostile, you know. I mean, we're adults here, you know. We can be mature about it, okay. But if you don't want to be mature, that's okay. I'll be happy to oblige you and kick you off the program, okay. You know, so, But anyway, hope everybody's doing well out there. Hope today finds you doing well. I wanted to kind of, this isn't what I wanted to talk about today, but this week, you know, I got a person call in for me to sell me some insurance. And I figure, you know, I haven't had insurance really in 7 years. 7 years ago, I was working this job, and I guess I broke their rules, and they fired me. And because they fired me, of course, the benefits that went with that job, they went away too. And it was kind of hard to get insurance because I wasn't making as much. I was making real good money with this job. And here I am 7 years later, and I'm making good money again. So I figured, you know, hey, I need to go and get me some insurance. You know, I had a couple of health issues, not really serious, you know, but they could be serious. I said, you know what? Hey, I'm making enough money now. Let me see if I can get some insurance, you know. And stupid me, I use the word stupid very lightly. I'm not saying, you know, I'm a stupid person or anything like that. But stupid me didn't realize that we are in the era of Obamacare. And what I didn't realize, now I knew all about the ins and outs of Obamacare, more outs than ins. That a lot of people's premiums were raised because of Obamacare. People's premiums were tripled and things of that sort. I forgot what they called it. I was just thinking about it before the show started, but the deductible went up for a lot of people, and you hear a lot of people still singing the praises of Obamacare. I was debating with this kid yesterday on my job. He's 25 years old. He's still on his parents' insurance until he's 26 years old. Now, I'm just going to be honest with you. I don't think a child needs to be on their parents' insurance until they're 26 years old. I think once a child moves out on their own and they can make their own money and stuff like that, then they should be able to buy their own health care. I'll say 21 years old. I'll say 21. Maybe 21 is still too old. I don't know. But I'll say 21 years old. And he was like, well, Obamacare is doing him good because, you know, he's still on his parents' health care. Now, to me, I'm like, you know, 26 years old and still on your parents' health care, that's almost like being 35 years old and still living with your parents. Even though I understand why some people still live with their parents. There are some reasons why some people still live with their parents. You know, they fall on hard times, boom, boom, boom. But some people abuse that. They abuse that opportunity. Me, I've been on my own since I was 19 years old, 1988. I was 19 years old in 1988, and I've been on my own ever since. And I'm not saying that everybody can be like me or should be like me or anything like that. Sometimes things do happen. I understand that. But he was like, you know, Obamacare did this for him, did that for him, did this. And I remember when people were making a big to-do about Obamacare back about 2010, you know, people were demonizing this group called the Tea Party, saying the Tea Party was a racist group and all that garbage. And Obamacare got passed because of a man named Justice Roberts. John Roberts, I think it is. Justice John Roberts. And he was the swing vote that allowed Obamacare to come into our system. Now, before then, people were like, no, don't do this because you're going to raise people's premiums. You're going to raise their deductibles. You know, we know healthcare needs an overhaul. We understand that. But this is just going to accelerate what's bad about healthcare already. Yeah, Roberts was blackmailed. Yeah, I believe he was too. People were saying, you know, don't do this, boom, boom, boom. You know, it's going to raise premiums. It's going to raise deductibles. You know, some people's premiums are going to triple. And people are like, no, y'all just don't like Barack Obama because he's a black man. And y'all just, you know, you white people, you know, you Republicans, you know, and everything. And so when Obamacare became the law, you know, it was like one of the provisions in, well, I can't say provisions. One of the things of Obamacare was that if you don't get Obamacare, then you're going to be penalized with a tax, which was wrong. Because government should not be forcing you to buy something if you don't want to buy it. And so Obamacare took over, and people were like, wait a minute. My premium used to be $700. Now it's $2,100. And we were given the promises by Obama that this was going to cost less than a cup of coffee per day. It was going to cost less than $2,500 a year. And if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. Let me be clear. This is going to be the best thing since the day I married Michelle Obama. But anyway, but it was a lie. It was a lie. And first time in American history that the federal government forced citizens to buy a third-party product, which smacks of socialism. I'm just saying that as an aside. Oh, hey, I appreciate it. Thank you. I try. He said I made a good Obama impression. But we were told all these, we were basically told all these lies, and people were singing the praises because this is Obama. He's the first black president. This means he's going to do good things for the country. He's going to help out the black folks. And the very thing that people warned about Obamacare came to pass. Now, on my job at the time, I was getting these benefits. They weren't on Obamacare. And the job that I was on, their taxes were raised, I think it was like $300,000 a year because they weren't doing Obamacare. And the benefits I was getting on this job were good. You know, I had to go to the hospital, didn't have to pay a lot out of pocket, you know, and everything. But I lost that insurance 7 years ago. And so I was like, okay, you know, here lately, hey, get some insurance. I want to do the responsible thing, want to take care of me and my wife, want to, you know, take care of our health. I don't want to be one of these that just ignores his health and everything. I just want to be sure. You know, and so I'm listening, you know, I'm talking to the representative on the phone, and you know how they play the music while you're waiting on somebody. Well, they were playing the sound bite, and it said the average deductible in healthcare today, the average amount that people are going to have to pay for their deductibles is a little more than $4,000. Now, someone please correct me on this, but before Obamacare, I think the deductible was like $500. Please correct me on this. I'm not too keen on Obamacare because I never really had to deal with it directly, but now I do. And not only that, the only time you can sign up for health care is between November and January. I was talking to a representative, and he said, well, we can't sign you up now, but we're going to keep you on the list until this fall in November, and then we'll call you back. And I'm sitting there like, wait a minute, can I get health care any time I want? You know, like say, I see the need now. Go, you know, go to the site and compare different, you know, entities and healthcare and say, hey, you know, this will be the best one for me. I want to pick this one out. Nope. Matter of fact, let's say you wanted to get health, your healthcare for around $200, maybe somewhere between $200, $300. Your deductible, folks, I am not making this up. I saw this with my own eyes. Your deductible will be $15,000. I said, say what? $15,000? What? Do they think we all grow money trees and we can just go into our backyard and pick money off the trees? $15,000. If you want to, the lower the cost of your health care, the higher your deductible. Now, if you wanted to, let's say you want to get $6,000, let's say you want to pay $6,000 a month for healthcare, which is crazy. Let's say you want to pay $6,000 a month, then your deductible will be around $5,000, which is still too high. I don't understand the thinking that went into Obamacare. I really don't. Except that now, to my knowledge, I'm not sure. I'm not, you know, to my knowledge, people who work in Congress and in the government, they don't use Obamacare for their health care. But the average Joe, you know, the average Joe citizen, they have to use it. And it's a do as I say, don't do as I do type of scenario. It seems like a lot of times, yeah, they exempted, yeah, oh gosh, four persons, I like you already. They exempted themselves from the mandate. They exempted themselves from it. And we're the ones that have to pay the burden of Obamacare, but the people in Congress, they can choose whatever health care they want. And being that some of them, they stay in Congress for, you know, several decades now, this is why I'm for term limits. I think you should only get two terms just like they do for president, but I digress. But a lot of these people, they stay in Congress for decades. They leave Congress. They're millionaires. They're millionaires. If Maxine Waters ever steps down from Congress, she's stepping down as a millionaire. She's a millionaire already. Nancy Pelosi, millionaire. All these people that have been in Congress since, basically, some of them been in Congress since I was in high school in the 80s. They're going to be millionaires. Sheila Jackson Lee, from what I know, she might not be a congresswoman anymore because she was running for mayor of Houston, Texas, and she lost that bid. She's not going to be moving in the hood. She's going to be living in nice. She's going to be living in a nice neighborhood. She's not going to live in a black neighborhood. Oh, I see you there. I see you there. I see you there, four persons. And, you know, I do this, you know, every show. I always, you know, get out what I have to say, and then I'll go to the phones. But just be patient, though. I appreciate that. But people like Sheila Jackson Lee, when they leave Congress, they're millionaires. They're making $100,000 a year, and they leave as millionaires. Now, try to figure that one out. And that has to do somewhat with their relationship with their lobbyists and everything, you know. I'm not even going to go into that. But that thing ticked me off this week. And I was ignorant to that fact, especially to the fact that the only time you can enroll for health care It's between November and January. That really blew my mind. And my wife and I, we were talking about it probably yesterday, a day before yesterday, and she was like, well, can someone just come up and just do away with Obamacare, you know, do it. It's not that simple. A lot of these laws, whether they benefit you or not, once they catch a hold into our system, it's very hard to repeal them. That's why I don't want this nation to become a socialist nation, because I already see the example of other socialist nations, nations pushing this communism thing, and these nations have been socialist run for decades. And they're still, even though the people are being run into the ground, a lot of people don't like it and whatever, they still haven't been able to repeal it. Why? That's the big question. Because these nations, they take such a stronghold on their citizens. This is why socialist nations push for gun control, things of that sort. Because once they get into the system, they don't want any opposition. Now, the United States has been a slow burn somewhat. I still see us going somewhat socialist now. We're still the best country in the world. We're still the freest country in the world. We're still hanging in there. But there are powers that be that want us to become socialist just like other nations. And they think that, you know, oh, the other nations, they did socialism wrong, but if we do it, it's going to be the right way. No, it isn't. Socialism, there is no example of socialism actually helping a country, actually being beneficial for any country. Just look at them. And Flycatch says, check out AOC's wealth before being elected to Congress and her net worth now. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It sounds great until you live in it. That's right. That's why when you're in a socialist country, they don't want you to say anything about no God, because they want to be God. They're the ones in control. We're the elites. We're the God. And what we think is best for you, that's what we're going to push on you instead of what's best for yourself. You can decide for yourself what's best for you, instead of someone else deciding that. But they want to be the brain trust in your life. They want to be the ones to say, hey, we know what's best for you. That's why Obamacare is now ingrained into our system, because we know what's best for you. But it ticked me off. I was like, are you serious? And see, I was ignorant to it. You know, I was just ignorant to the whole thing. I was like, you mean to tell me I have to wait until November to enroll? And not only that, if I get the cheapest health care, my deductible is going to be $15,000. And you know what that's doing? A lot of people are like, I'll do away I can't afford health care. That's the biggest fear. A lot of people, they're like, what am I going to do? I got bills. I got this. I got that. And then Obama sat there. He lied about it. Nobody's calling him out on it, except for those of us who got common sense. Those of us who got common sense are the ones who are speaking out against it. But, you know, you got the ABCs and the CNNs and the CBSs of the world trying to shut those voices down. Oh, those are just little peons. That's the lunatic fringe right there. You know, don't listen to them. And it's crazy. And who is suffering the most? It's not the elites. It's not the elites. It's the average Joe citizen that's suffering. Now, before I go on, I want to go on to another subject. Before I go on, I want to give a shout out to Flycatch, the four persons. This is the first time I've seen you on the show. Welcome to the show. And the Alaskan, my dude all the way from Alaska. This is what I like about this. I'm getting somebody all the way from Alaska on this Billy. That's all right, you know. But I just want to give you guys a shout out. Thank you all for joining the show. Welcome to Black by Color Only, where I speak about the truth to the black nation. And understand, I know there's no such thing as a black nation. That's just a way of speaking and whatever. I do this show because I am a black man, nondescript black man, living in Durham, North Carolina, one of the best areas to live in the country. And I don't say that because I live here, but it actually is one of the best places. I wouldn't say Durham itself is the best place, but the area that it's in is one of the best places to live. You know, moved down here in 1988. I had just gotten kicked out of college because I couldn't pay for it, and I decided to stay down here. Grew up in Washington, D.C., Prince George's County, Fort Washington, Oxon Hill, all that area, you know, not too far from the D.C. area, and decided to live down here because D.C. I'm not a big city person. I'm just not. And I'll be honest with you, Durham, North Carolina is kind of big for me, too. Durham is maybe about 280,000 people in Durham, but it's still too big for me. I'm one of them country people, you know. When you go into the country, your nearest next door neighbor is like half a mile away. That's the type of person I am. I got a family member lives in Madison, Virginia, which from what I've seen in statistics, Madison, Virginia is probably the smallest town in the state of Virginia. It has a population of 200, and I have family there. And I said that would be an ideal place to live. Not that I'm going to move to Madison, but I like it. I like it here. I love North Carolina. I really want to live in Florida, to be honest with you. Florida is my favorite state. When I was a kid, I was a Miami Dolphins fan. And, of course, being a football fan and a nerd at the same time, you know, it causes you to, you know, you're like, okay, Miami's in Florida, so got this book on the 50 states, and I looked up Florida and familiarized myself with all the cities and everything, the Panama cities and the Jacksonville's and the Orlando's and everything. And I said, I want to live in Florida one day. But lo and behold, North Carolina became my stumbling block. And I've lived here since 1988. And be honest with you, I really have no complaints about living in North Carolina. Yeah, the hurricanes were real dominant. Oh gosh, don't get me talking about them. The Miami hurricanes. But I told myself, I was even praying to God one time. I said, you know, I said, Lord, I want to live in Florida. But if I never make it to Florida, I will not feel like I've been cheated because I lived here in North Carolina. If that door opens for me to go to Florida, I will. But if I spend out the rest of my days in North Carolina has been good to me. So, you know, I've been to the beaches. Of course, I live in the Piedmont area. I've been to the mountains. North Carolina is a great state. If you're looking for a state that you can raise a family and enjoy the mountains and the beaches at the same time, I'll tell you, North Carolina is it. So, oh yeah, I remember them rivalries between the Canes and Notre Dame, you know. And the Canes used to whoop up on Notre Dame a lot, didn't they? I don't mean to sound disrespectful when I say whoop up, but the Canes, Now, here's the thing about me. When I was a Miami Dolphins fan, I couldn't stand the Miami Hurricanes. I couldn't stand them. For some strange reason, I could not stand the Miami Hurricanes. Still don't like them. And one of the main... Oh, okay. Okay, cool. That, yeah. But one of the things... one of the main reasons why I am a Miami Dolphins fan. When I was a kid, I used to be a fan of O.J. Simpson. You know, he just passed away. O.J., you know, I know that triggers a lot of people to say O.J. right now. But I used to be an O.J. Simpson fan. But I wasn't necessarily a football fan. But O.J. Simpson, it seemed like every time he would play this team called the Miami Dolphins, they would lose. And, you know, after a while, I just lost interest in football. And one day my mom, you know, she wanted to buy some shirts for me and my brother because, you know, we're boys. You know, you got to wear football shirts. That was back when we believed boys were boys and girls were girls. So she wanted to buy these football shirts for us. And she asked me, she said, well, Vincent, what team do you want? Now, at the time, like I said, I was a big nerd and everything. I used to like dolphins. Used to like to read about dolphins, killer whales, things like that. And I said, Miami Dolphins. And it stuck. This was in the mid-70s. It stuck. My brother got the Pittsburgh Steelers because that was the, you know, that was the Terry Bradshaw era and everything. But eventually my brother, you know, he switched to the Seattle Seahawks because my brother was born in Tacoma. We used to live in Tacoma, and while we were up there, my brother was born. So he switched to the Seattle Seahawks, but he was a big-time Pittsburgh Steelers fan in elementary school. And, yeah, the Steelers' defense was the truth. They were probably the best defense I think I've ever seen in football. I remember watching them in the Super Bowl against the Rams. You know, and watching that, and, you know, I'm still not a Steelers fan. They're a team I don't care too much for. I don't hate them. I don't like them. It just depends on who they're playing at the time. Like, if they're playing the Dallas Cowboys, I'm a Steelers fan. If they're playing the Miami Dolphins, no, I'm not a Steelers fan. You know, when they played the Seattle Seahawks in the Super Bowl, I was a Seattle Seahawks fan. When they played the Cardinals in the Super Bowl, I was a Cardinals fan. It depends on who they play, you know. So, but that was a thing then. But now I'm kind of out of sports. I'm still a Miami Dolphins fan at heart, but the NFL has shown to me that they don't want me as a fan anymore because they want to go all wokey and politically correct. And I don't watch football to be politically correct. I watch football so I can see how many points the Patriots are going to beat my team in a game. That's all I care about. I don't care about your politics. I don't care. Look, I don't care about, you know, they have this thing now for several years. Well, I'll just be honest with you. Colin Kaepernick messed up everything. He messed the whole thing up. Colin Kaepernick is the reason why we got this stop racism theme in the end zones of the football fields now, and I get tired of that. Stop racism. You're showing that in an entity that is 75% black, the NFL, mostly black. And it gets on my nerve, really gets on my nerve. And the NFL has pretty much been black dominated since the 60s. And I don't watch football to see your little message because you want to be politically correct. And then Colin Kaepernick, he gets up there and he's like, you know, I don't want to stand for a flag of a country that oppresses black people. I'm like, why do you all feel like that when you get up and speak, you act like you speak for all of us? Because you don't speak for me. I haven't been oppressed as a black person living in the United States. And I live in the South. I live in the South. Love it down here. Southeastern part of the United States. People keep talking about how racist it is around here. Someone show it to me. Virginia, North Carolina. Oh, gosh. Next to Florida, South Carolina's got to be my favorite state. I love that state. Georgia, Florida, Louisiana, Tennessee, Kentucky, Mississippi, Alabama, all that area, Texas. See, there's my nerd coming out. You know, I'm a big time geography nerd. You know, so. But I love it down here. Fly your dog on Confederate flag. I don't care. It's a piece of colored cloth to me. I don't give a rip pair of jeans if you fly in a Confederate flag. I don't care. Now, I'm not a fan of that flag because they're the ones that lost they lost the war. But I'm like, look, if you want to fly your Confederate flag, you got that freedom. I'm not going to look at you like, ooh, he must be a member of the Ku Klux Klan. I don't care about that mess. I have had conversations with several people who sport that Confederate flag, which that is not the Confederate flag. That's the flag of the Army of Northern Virginia that was headed up by General Robert E. Lee. That's why sometimes when you see that flag, they call it the General Lee, because that represented the army that he controlled during the Civil War. But I don't care about that flag. Look, I'll be honest with you, and I know a lot of people might look at me, you know, with their eyebrows raised, but if you fly a Nazi flag, I don't care. As long as you ain't bringing your mess over into my space and trying to mess with me and my family, hey, look, you can be my next door neighbor and fly a Nazi flag. I don't care. Because that's right. It's not a crime to be an idiot. It really isn't. I know sometimes we want it to be a crime, but it isn't. But I have no problem with it. Look, you want to fly that flag, you go right ahead. What I don't like is people telling me how I'm supposed to think as a black person. That's what I do not like. I'm not a political person per se. I do talk politics and everything and stuff like that. But the thing about, I really don't understand politics to the point that, you know, of the Sean Hannitys and the Rush Limbaughs and all them. I don't understand politics to that point. And I'm not a person who takes sides with politics, you know, whatever your political leaning is. Now, people consider me to be a conservative, and I'm saying, you know, hey, yeah, maybe I am a conservative. I really, all I care about is the truth. That's all I care about. And I don't care which side you're on. If you're speaking a lie, I'm going to call you out on it. I'm really not a fan of anyone in politics right now. And even though I believe that Donald Trump is the best president, yes, you have heard it on this show. Donald Trump is the best president that we've had in my lifetime, probably ever. But that doesn't mean I'm a fan of Donald Trump. Now, when Donald Trump first ran for president, I didn't vote for him. I didn't think he would be a good president because I'm like, yeah, blase, blase, all these promises, everybody, you know, running their mouths, all these promises. Because the previous election, I didn't vote for Mitt Romney. Because folks were sitting there singing his praises, talking about, oh, he's going to roll back Obamacare. I said, no, he isn't. No, he isn't. Mm-mm. It's not going to be that simple. And then Donald Trump came up, and I'm like, oh, gosh, I definitely ain't voting for him. But then I started seeing some things. I said, wait a minute. Whoa, 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 whoa. Wait a second here. Wait a minute. What is this I'm seeing here? You mean to tell me this guy actually made some promises, and he is trying his best to keep them? Lowest black unemployment since records began. lowest female unemployment, Hispanic unemployment since records began. Whoa, what is it? What? Wait a minute. He's opening up North Dakota for oil exploration. People are getting jobs in the six figures. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. Okay, Trump, I apologize. But that doesn't mean that I am a Trump fan. But his policies, oh, I'm a fan of those all day long. Says, you got people today that look at someone with a beard and a penis and say, woman. Yeah. Oh, we live in cuckoo banana town today. You know, you got people saying, oh, a man can get pregnant. No, a man cannot get pregnant. Trans women are women. No, they're not. They're men pretending to be women. And notice I said pretending. I say that bold print, underline, exclamation point. But this is the world we live in today. And if I vote for anybody, I'm not voting because of your political party. I'm voting basically because your principles are closest to mine. You know, I'm a born-again Christian. I know people don't like born-again Christians, and people got their issues with Christianity and, you know, the Christians this and the Christians that. And 9 times out of 10, these people don't know what a Christian really is. But all I'm about is the truth. I'm not about taking anyone's rights away from them or anything. All I'm about is following God's word and dispensing the truth. That's all I'm about. Now, you might not be a Christian or whatever. That's your choice. But don't try to tell me what a Christian really is and you don't understand what Christianity is, because I do. Read my Bible every day. And I don't think that I'm better than everybody else or anything like that. I'm a person. I got my faults. Lord knows I have my faults. I have my faults. And I'm a person who is striving for perfection. Knows that I'm not going to get to perfection. But I'm striving for it. You know, like Vince Lombardi used to say, we're going to chase the heck out of perfection. And in the way we're going to catch excellence. That's what I strive for. And I will never be perfect until the day I die. Yes, I'm a Christian too, because I am messed up. But, you know, people have their, they have their ideals about Christians, and they, you know, they want to go into history and say Christians did this. And a lot of the atrocities that are put on the shoulders of Christians in history, those people were not Christians. Now, I'm not going to go off, you know, into detail about that. I'll probably say that for another show, but a lot of those people were not Christians. They said they were Christians. They may have carried a cross around and whatever and talked about in the name of God and the name of Jesus, but that doesn't mean that they were Christians. People need to understand that. Just because you are in an airplane hangar and you call yourself an airplane, that doesn't make you an airplane. But anyway, I don't know how I got off on this tangent. You guys in the chat room, y'all need to stop distracting me. I blame you all. But anyway, I wanted to talk about something else that really boiled my potatoes this week. I don't know if you all ever heard of this young man named King Randall in the Atlanta area of Georgia. This dude, I think he's either 23 or 24 years old. I think he is. Young black man, probably barely into his mid-20s. He decided upon himself to buy some land, get some property, buy some school buses, and he was going to start an organization. I think it's called the X for Men, if you all know anything about it. you all, if you all know anything about it, you know, just correct me on that. But I think it's called the X for Men, and he wanted to change the direction of our young black men in this country. He wanted to teach them skills. He wanted to teach them etiquette. Which I'm sitting here and I'm looking at, I'm like, this dude is just barely into his 20s. And he has got this mindset. He wanted to teach young men how to change the oil in their car. He wanted to teach them life skills that they'll learn when they get out in the world so that they can avoid a life of crime. Because a lot of us were like, oh man, we got to do something about the crime among our young people, especially our young black people. Now you got this dude, he's trying to do this to help out basically the black people in his community, because he said he's giving up on black, you know, black youth as a whole. He said, if I can make a difference in my community. But do you think that the apostles of blackness are going to sing his praises because he wants to improve the quality of life for black people? Nope. I just started getting an understanding of what people meant by the crab in the bucket syndrome. Because you have this dude, he's trying to make life better for black people, for the black youth. He wants to teach them reading, you know, which reading is something in the black community. Why so many of our black people don't know how to read is beyond me. Because I entered first grade in 1974. 1974, I was out reading almost everybody in my class. Probably was out reading everybody in my class, in my age group. I was in the first grade. I was reading on a third grade reading level in 1974. This is why I'm so hard on black folks. You know, folk get on here, they start talking, why are you so hard on the black people? Why don't you talk about what the white people are doing? You know why I don't talk about the white people so much? Because I know that being a black man, we can do better. The apostles of blackness, they don't care about better. All they care about is their victimhood. So this dude is in Georgia. He's trying to make a difference in the black community. And this bonehead named Roland Martin, those of you all who don't know Roland Martin, he is the prince of the apostles of blackness. This dude, all he talks about is victimhood in the black community. That's all he talks about. The white man this and a white man that and a white man this and a white man that. That's all he talks about. You go to his channel and you watch one of his videos or whatever, you want to punch your iPhone or your TV or whatever you're watching. The dude he's frustrating. And you got your others like Joy Reid, Tariq Nasheed, Rashad Ritchie, that token black dude on the Young Turks. Got a whole bunch of them out there. And all they do is push victimhood. 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 Oh, yeah, Whoopi. Oh, gosh. Don't even talk about The View. Don't even talk about them harpies on The View. Whoopi Goldberg and Sonny Hostin and Joy Behar, all the rest of them. And here's the thing about it. Most of these people, they got their big break because of white folks. Whoopi did get her break because of white folks. Oprah Winfrey, yeah. Oprah Winfrey is a classic example of we can make it as black people in this country. But what does Oprah and the rest of her lackeys do? They always want to talk about black victimhood. Oh, we got to work harder in order to get to the success that white people do. Well, tell me, how much harder do white people have to get to the success of Asian people? Because of all the groups in this country, Asian people are the most successful. But I was looking at this dude, King Randall, and I said, this guy is doing a good work. He has no support from the black community. The only support he gets is from white people. He said the only criticism he gets from anyone is from black folks. And I'm like, now that is a crying shame right there. That is a pure crying shame. He's trying to help black people become respectable young adults so that when they go out into the world, they can make a difference, a positive difference in society. But you got these people tearing him down. He was teaching the kids how to respond when they get pulled over by the police, because, you know, the police are killing off black people, you know, at an alarming rate. You know, every time a black person gets pulled over by a white police officer, he's in danger for his life because he might die. He might not make it home. This dude was teaching the kids what to do when they get pulled over by a police officer. He said, when a police officer gets to your window, you should already have your information at the ready. He said, you should have all your windows down. If it's dark at nighttime or whatever, have all your windows down and have your lights on in your car. I said, well, dog, I never thought I would go that far, but yeah, that's a good idea. Have your windows down, have the lights on in your car so the police officer won't have to get suspicious about what's in your car. And he told these kids, he said, you shouldn't be driving around with drugs or anything anyway. But if the police officer says he smells drugs in your car, he wants you to get out of the car, get out of the car. Don't give him any lip. Because that police officer, he wants to go home too. You want to go home, and he wants to go home. And you sit there and you give him some lip, you're just delaying your time to get home. Now, I've been pulled over several times, maybe four times, by the police officers. Not one time did the police officer have his hand on his weapon. Not one time did he tell me to get out the car. But yet and still, this is what the police do to black people, according to conventional wisdom, quote unquote. I've never had a police officer point a gun at me. And people say, oh, you lucky. You lucky. I don't believe in luck, first of all. But I know how to be a law-abiding citizen. And I understand that me sitting here fussing with a police officer is not going to go well for me. When I look at cases like Sandra Bland, people always want to bring up Sandra Bland as one of the, you know, the martyrs of black victimhood. Sandra Bland was pulled over because she crossed lanes and didn't use her turn signal, which, yeah, it sounds petty, yeah, but that's the law. If you're going to cross lanes, you need to turn on your turn signal. Police officer pulled her over. She wanted a cop and attitude. Tell her to get out of the car. I ain't getting out of the car. They had to drag her out of the car. And then she ended up killing herself. And people were sitting there saying that the police killed Sandra Bland. No, she murdered herself. And then not only that, the way she killed herself, she took a trash bag and hanged herself in her jail cell. And people were like, well, they're still responsible. They shouldn't have had a trash bag in her jail cell. How'd they know? I mean, like, the police were like, yeah, let's put her in this jail cell. You know, we got a trash can in there with a trash bag. Maybe she'll hang herself. Yeah, yeah, that's the idea. You see how stupid people think sometimes? God's ordained will and God's passed the will. I like that. I like that. But when we see these instances of people who have been killed by the police, 9 times out of 10, they struck up an attitude with the police officer and escalated the situation to the point where they ended up losing their lives. Michael Brown, classic point. Michael Brown and a friend of his robs the store. They're walking down the street. Darren Wilson tells them to get back on the sidewalk. They want to cop an attitude with them. Darren Wilson tries to get out of his vehicle. Michael Brown tries to shove him back into his police vehicle, tries to grab his gun. But oh no, Michael Brown, he was an innocent. And they always showed you this picture of this cherubic looking Michael Brown with his graduation gown and his hat on and everything. I would love for somebody to look into Michael Brown's record as a student when he was in school. We never heard about that. We never heard about what type of student Michael Brown was. All we heard was this innocent black kid. He was marching to grandma's house with a basket of goodies. And the big bad wolf police officer just came and shot him in cold blood. And then they just left him lying in the road for hours. And then when it came down to the verdict of whether Darren Wilson murdered Michael Brown or not, and he was found not guilty, his stepfather, with his pants hanging down off his butt, talking about burn this bee down, burn this bee down, burn this bee down. Now, here's the thing about Michael Brown's stepfather. He wasn't his stepfather. His mother wasn't married to him. But people keep calling him his stepfather. Michael Brown didn't even live with his mom. He lived with his grandmother. I think her name was Pearl or something like that. Matter of fact, his grandmother was selling T-shirts of Michael Brown, commemorative T-shirts of Michael Brown, and Leslie McSpadden, who was Michael Brown's mother, comes in and her and a cousin, and they assaulted the grandmother. But you don't see the grandmother as grieving when you hear about Michael Brown or anything. You don't see the grandmother. You see the mother. And then lo and behold, when Hillary Clinton was running for president against Donald Trump in 2016, who you see posing with Hillary Clinton? Leslie McSpadden. Because Hillary Clinton going to help out those black people. And we've been singing that song since maybe the 50s and the 60s. And our communities have just gotten worse. Just worse. Because we think our massa, the government, gonna help us out. That's what they gonna do. They gonna help us out. Uh-huh. Keep on thinking that. All right, folks. I don't know where this hour went, but I am going to go to the break, do some advertisements, and when I'm done, I will see you on the other side. You are listening to Black by Color Only on CNM Radio.
Did you know podcast advertising is one of the most effective ways to advertise your product or service? Thousands of people could be hearing your ad here. To start boosting your business with podcast advertising, go now to conservativenationmedia2017@gmail.com and send us a copy of the ad you want played, and we will do the rest. Thank you, and God bless.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans. When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. Brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese, and guess what? Egg rolls showed up like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Welcome back to the show. We're at the top of the hour. If you would like to call in as a guest, the call-in number is 646-478-5284. And I see that caller in the queue. I'm going to get with you in a few minutes. Just hang on there. I'll get to you. You know, before I left, you know, I was talking about, you know, these grievances that people keep pushing in the black community, you know, and a lot of, most of them are not true. And why these black leaders keep coming up and talking about the victimhood that's going on in black America on a daily basis. And basically, I don't know what they're talking about. And then they'll tear down a person like King Randall, who is trying to affect positive change in his community. Roland Martin called him an idiot. Called him an idiot because the dude was like, you know, hey, I want to do this. I don't want to wait on Donald Trump. I don't want to wait on Joe Biden. I want to affect change now, you know. And Roland Martin like, well, don't you vote and all this. I was like, man, someone needs to. I wish certain people had a volume control on their neck or something, you know, so you can turn down their. Their lips, because some people shouldn't even be talking. I'll be honest with you. They shouldn't be talking, you know. But this is the world we live in, and this is the world I'm trying. This is what I'm trying to dispel in the black communities. And I've been called a coon. I've been called you're a sellout. You know, one guy recently called me a black comfort dog for white liberal for white conservatives. You know, that was a cute one. I've been called Mr. Step It, Fetch It, Oreo. I've been called all them names. But here's the thing about me. I'm not intimidated by your names. I'm just not. You know, you can call me all the names you want. You're just strengthening my resolve. I say that ad nauseum. You're just strengthening my resolve. When you call me names and things like that, it's like, okay, that means I'm on the right track then. And one thing that really boggles my mind, I don't know why people take this stuff personal, because I don't think like they do. I don't understand that, because I have a difference of opinion than you do. Like, I'm a part of a collective. I'm not part of the collective. I'm a free-thinking black man. I know how to think for myself. I don't need anyone to do any thinking for me. You don't need to think for me. I know how to think for myself. I have no brain damage up there. I know how to think. I know how to use critical thinking skills. But people, they feel threatened when one of their own, quote unquote, steps away from the collective and starts thinking for themselves. And then they say, oh, you're still living on the plantation. No, I'm not on the plantation. I'm the runaway slave. I'm the modern day analogy of a runaway slave, because I don't want to be on the plantation. I don't want to sit here and bellyache with the rest of black America and the apostles of blackness. That's not my thing. I don't get caught up in that mess. You know, when I was growing up and they used to do the Black History Month and everything, I was like, why we got to be doing this? Why? It's all part of history. There's no, people, let me tell you something. And you might disagree with what I'm about to say right now. That's okay. But there is no such thing as Black history. It's history. It's part of history. Black history is just part of the piece of the puzzle of all history. Now, I would be ticked off if I bought a puzzle and it said 500 pieces and I opened up that box, broke that box open, and was only one piece in there. I'd be ticked off. Wait a minute, you said it was 500 pieces. Yeah, you can say you should have been able to feel, you know, just get what I'm saying. You might say, oh, you know, you should have felt it and shook it up and see, you know, just get my point, please. I'll be ticked off if I got a 500-piece puzzle, got it home, opened up that box, and it was just one piece in there. That's what Black history is. You see a little pattern on there. You see something on there, but you don't know what the whole picture looks like through that one piece. It's not until you get all the other pieces of the puzzle together where you can see the picture as a whole. I say this because I love puzzles. I love jigsaw puzzles. But Black history is just a piece. Why can't we just teach all history? Yeah, we can talk about, you know, the hurdles that Black people had to overcome in history and everything and stuff like that. But the way it is being taught today is being taught that, oh, you see what happened to Medgar Evers in 1962? You know, that's still going on today. No, it isn't. If you will be straight up and honest with yourselves, the Black grievances are largely gone. Do I believe that there are still racist white people out there? Yeah, yeah. I also understand there are racist Black people too. Racist Asians, racist Hispanics. Every group, every color group in this world today has its modicum of racism in it. Now, me, I don't like any racism. I don't like it. I don't like seeing Black people being racist against white people. I don't like seeing white people being racist against Black people. I don't like Indian people being racist against Asian people. I don't like racism, period. And yeah, there are probably racist white cops out there too. But you know what? Why let us give them an opportunity to show their racism by getting all disrespectful to them? Yeah, they might be racist, but a lot of them know how to keep that racism in check. They'd rather hold on to their jobs. They would rather do their jobs than to be racist. But if you want to cop an attitude with them, then maybe that's when the racism does come out. But a lot of times we escalate these situations against the cops, and then when we end up getting killed, we want to talk racism instead of, no, he should have obeyed the police officer. Simple thing. It's simple. But anyway, I know with all the talking I've done today, the fruit bats are going to be out, so, you know, it's about that time, y'all. Now, I play that when I'm about to go to the phones. And the reason why I play that is a warning to those of you all who might be on the phone and you want to come on here and give me the business, such as excessive profanity, ad hominem attacks, gaslighting, character assassinations, trolling, just coming on to the show to interrupt and just be disruptive to the show. If you are that type of person, you are a fruit bat. And if you come on here being a fruit bat, you will suffer the curse of the fruit bat, which means I will kick you off this show. Once again, like I said, I don't care if you agree with me or disagree with me. Be respectable in your interactions on this program, okay? Now, having said all that, let me get, I think this is the four persons, because he told me, or she. Can we get this person on here? Hello, welcome to the show.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear.
All right, I'm trying a new microphone out, so I want to make sure it works. You know, everything you said tonight, I agree with 100%. And here's what it boils down to. As long as they got us fighting with each other, they win. And it's,
that's right.
And they know what they're doing. You talk about all these politicians that, you know, make $100,000 a year and they're millionaires. I'll give you a perfect example. John Corzine, you remember him?
No, but enlighten
okay.
me.
John Corzine spent $100 million to get elected senator in the state of New Jersey. That's a job that pays $130,000 a year. But what kind of man would spend $100 million for $130,000 a year job? He stays in that job for 4 years. All right.
Wow.
And then he leaves to run for governor of the state of New Jersey. And that's a job that pays $5,000 more a year, $140,000, and he spends another $60 million to get that job. So this cat spent $160 million to make $250,000. Now, no one in the world would think that that's a reasonable return on your investment unless he had something to gain out of it. Well, a few years later, he's back in the private sector. He's working for a Wall Street firm, and a whole bunch of money turned up missing.
Uh-oh.
And I actually watched the hearings, and John Corzine actually testified before Congress that they just lost $2 billion, billion with a B, just lost it. They don't know what happened to it. No charges,
wow.
No prosecution. $2 billion. Okay? This is what we're facing. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, how do these people make so much money while they're in Congress? Well, it's real simple. I'm gonna ask you something. Do you think Nancy Pelosi is a brilliant person?
No. Absolutely
no.
not.
Well, then how is it that Nancy Pelosi has been able to pick stocks better than Warren Buffett?
That's a
fact.
Good question.
That's a fact. Well, here's why. Because when Shearing Plough is about to have a new drug that's about to be approved, all these people in Congress just buy up shares of Shearing Plough stock before it's introduced before the floor. They enter they do their little head count behind the scenes. They know it's going to pass, so they buy the stock. It passes, the stock rises. The same thing when they know something's going to fail, they sell the stock. Well, that's called insider trading. You and I go to jail for
that. Yeah, that's what I was saying. I was about to ask you that question. I said that sounds like insider trading to me, which the regular Joe Blow citizen will go to jail for, like they did with Martha Stewart some years ago.
Exactly. And what Martha Stewart did is small potatoes compared to what these people do every year. And
yeah.
I mean, you got example after example of, like, you know, politicians making $100,000, $170,000 a year, that are worth $190 million. Okay?
Mm.
And the worst part about it is some of the richest politicians are from some of the poorest districts.
You know what? You got a point there.
The minorities in this country are being destroyed by people that are making millions of dollars by them voting them into office year after year after year. Now, that's the definition of insanity to me. You keep doing the same thing and expecting a different result. I need somebody to explain that to me. I mean, you mentioned quite a few. San Francisco is a perfect example. All right, Nancy Pelosi in San Francisco. Now, let's face it, San Francisco is a mess right now. Passed the law a few years ago mandating an increase in the minimum wage. And the only company in America that was exempted from the increase of the minimum wage was a company that was in her district. These are the kind of things that they do. They pick and choose. They're picking and choosing the winners and the losers.
Yep.
And
that's what they're doing.
And so here's the reason why it affects the minority community, why it affects the black community especially.
Yep.
They need you. They need you to be slaves. And I'm sorry for being so blunt in the language, but they need
Please
you to be slaves. Because,
please be blunt.
Yeah, because, my friend, I'm going to give you a statistical fact. If the Republicans can get their share of the black vote up to 10%, 12%, they don't need a majority, 10%, 12%, 14% consistently, you will never see the Democratic Party win a national election again.
That's right.
That is a statistical fact. So what do they do? They promise high and deliver low. Promise high and deliver low. And the districts where these people are elected year after year after year, the crime is the highest, the illiteracy is the highest, the drugs are
the
highest. Now, I just want to ask you something. Okay? You look at a pimp or you look at a drug pusher. Is it in their advantage for their people that they control to become free? Is it to their advantage for those people to get on their own 2 feet? No.
Nope.
No. The drug pusher needs to keep you hooked, and the pimp needs to keep the woman believing that she can't survive without him, or that if she leaves, it's going to be death to her, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And these people are scared to death. That now, to a large extent, the Hispanics in this country are starting to get it.
Yeah.
The Hispanic population is starting to get it. And the black population in this country is also starting to get it, but at a slower rate. Once that
That's
happens,
right.
once the tide turns and the young voters and the black voters and the Hispanic voters really start to get it, you're going to see the tide turn in this country. And that's what scares them, because they're afraid of losing their golden calf. And you've got politicians in Washington that have been in Congress for 30 years.
Yeah.
And I don't think the Founding Fathers ever envisioned that. Anyway, that's – by the way, I just wanted to let you know where the name comes from. My name is John, by the way.
Okay.
And the four persons comes from Mark chapter 12, commandment. You shall love the Lord your God with your whole heart, your whole mind, your whole soul, and your whole strength. That's the four persons.
Ah, I like that. I like that. I like that. That's all right. So where are you calling from, John?
I'm calling from Virginia, and I've got, you know, we've got our own show on Blog Talk Radio, and just had some free time today and said, well, let me listen to what else is going on out there. I actually did a a show yesterday, a video on YouTube, and I was going to update it today about the real state of the Electoral College. And I'm going to tell you, Democrats are running scared. Did you hear about the are you familiar with 538.com, Nate Silver's group?
No.
Okay. Well, they're one of these groups that studies, analyzes the polls, analyzes the Electoral College, and kind of gets a real state of where the election is right now. And Nate Silver released a report today that showed Trump leading in all of the battleground states. And in all of them, Biden is polling at less than 42% in all seven. And he's less than 40% in five of the seven. Those numbers mean he's toast. This means he's just toast. And that means that Trump is now going to start expanding the map. And it's showing that states like Virginia, Minnesota, Maine, in fact, they just released a poll that shows Trump leading in Maine. Now, it's only one poll, but yeah. So the map is coming apart for the Democrats. And why? Because of this phenomenon of promise high, deliver low, promise high, deliver low. And it's gotten to the point where they've gone so far out on a limb, they can't deliver anymore. And the American people are finally starting to wake up. You know, when groceries triple in cost over 4 years, and you said something at the beginning of the show that I think needs to be amplified, right? When the price of a gallon of gas goes up $3 a gallon, that doesn't hurt Nancy Pelosi or Sheila Jackson Lee or any of those. It don't hurt them. They could care less. It sure hurts me.
Yeah.
And it sure hurts you.
Yeah.
Okay, so
yep.
The guy that's making $15 an hour, all right, having to spend an extra $70, $80 a month just to fill his gas tank up, you better believe he's hurting, okay? And after a while, people got to get the message, why do we keep electing these fools that are selling us down the river so that you know, when Trump was president, we were the largest oil exporter in the world.
That's right.
And people need to understand that's not just an economic benefit. It's a national security benefit. Because we don't have to go hat in hand to all these countries that hate us and want to destroy us. Remember 9/11? They don't like us. They want to kill us. So how much sense does it make for us to be buying oil from people who want to kill us? I can't make any sense out of that. Anyway, I didn't want to suck all the air out of the room on your show, but just so much you said that I agree with.
Yeah, you're not sucking any of the air out of here. Now, you're talking to a native Virginian right here. Which part of Virginia are you from?
I've lived in all over the place. I live in Manassas now. I've lived in Front Royal. I've lived in Lorton. I've lived in Triangle, all over the place in Virginia. Also lived.
I was born in Roanoke.
Okay. Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah,
I've been there.
Yeah. That's my hometown.
been down to Roanoke many times, and I grew up, being a Redskins fan, and I just think it's a shame what's happened to that franchise. Don't get me started. As a matter of fact, I believe we played your team in the Super Bowl two times, the Dolphins. Redskins and the Dolphins.
The Redskins changing their name, that was the straw that broke the camel's back for me. I was never a Redskins fan. I've always been a Dolphins fan, but it was just something to say Redskins. You know, it was like you know, when people would say Redskins, you know, you knew they backed their team and everything. Yeah, I'm a Redskins fan.
I will tell you this. Growing up in Northern Virginia, there were only four times that my entire family got together every year. All right? And that was Christmas, Thanksgiving, and the two Redskin Cowboy games. The only time that my family it was a big thing back there, and it's the Cowboys and the Indians. I mean, how much more tradition can you get than that?
I mean, really? Now it's the Redskins versus the Cowboys versus the Commanders. Come on now.
Yeah.
It took away the classic sound, you know, like you say Cowboys and Redskins, you know, Indians and Cowboys, you know. It's like, yeah, that's a classic clash right there. But now it's Cowboys versus Commanders.
And the thing about it is, you know, someone said something. I'm trying to remember all the points you made during the show because I agreed with so many of them. And you were talking about what's happened in the NFL. And I remember years ago when I was watching a big-time football game with my friends, and my wife walked in and said, I don't understand why you guys are so wrapped up in football. It doesn't mean anything, okay? And I said to her, I said, that's exactly why we're wrapped up in it. It's an escape. It's a recreation. It's a getting away from the world and getting away from the stress of the world and everything else that's going on. And now what they want to do is they want to take all this external noise that we're trying to get away from and put it into the game.
Yeah.
And it's they're destroying themselves. And most of the American people are not on board with the garbage that they're doing and the garbage that they're trying to, you know, force down our throats. It has nothing to do with oppression of a race or a certain group of people. You hit the nail on the head when you were talking about the Confederate flag and the Nazi flag and things like that, and even racism itself. Okay? There is nothing illegal about being a moron. If somebody wants to be a moron, they can be a moron. Now, I'm not going to associate with them. If I know a racist, I'm not going to associate with them. I'm not going to have anything to do with them, and I'm going to call them an idiot. But I don't know how you criminalize stupidity. And that's basically where we're at. And this country was based on the premise that in order for people who have legitimate moral beliefs, for their right to free speech to be protected, we're going to have to put up with listening to some idiots about their nonsense too.
Exactly.
Somebody said something to me a few years ago. Yeah, somebody said something to me a few years ago about, what do you think about Howard Stern? I said, I think he's an imbecile. Okay. Well, are you in favor of getting him thrown off radio? No. Why would I be in favor of that? I don't like him. I changed the station. I don't know why, but we have this mentality now among a large segment of the population that if I don't agree with what you say, I got to burn your city down. I don't get that. So. Anyway, just thank you for taking my call. I really, really enjoy your show. You're really making a lot of sense, and God bless you for what you do.
Well, I appreciate it, and God bless you too. Let's see. I'm going to keep. Yeah. And if you would like to continue to listen, you can do so. I'm going to bring on another caller.
Yeah, I'm going to continue to listen. Yeah.
Okay. Hello, welcome to the show, Pianki. What's up, man?
Oh, this guy. You know, if people disapprove of what's going on, then they need to sign a petition for an Article 5 convention. Whereas the state that signs the proposal can work toward amending the U.S. Constitution right now on three proposals. One, term limits. Proposals out there is to hold elected officials, government, federal officials, and also federal officials that head agencies to a maximum of 24 years. U.S. senators, the three terms, that's 18 years. U.S. Congress people, nine terms, that's 18 years. After that, you're gone. Whether you the head of the IRS, AFT, FDA, Department of Education, 24 years and you're gone. You got to go. And also their staff. Next proposal is fiscal responsibility of the U.S. government. Ridiculous to have $3 trillion fastly approaching 45 that never would be paid off. And the next one is overreach of the federal government. The states give the federal government power, not the other way around.
That's right.
The state control the federal government, not the other way around. It's the fact that people don't carry out their civic responsibility to make that happen. Congress is never going to impose term limits on itself.
No.
Constitution allows two ways to have a amendment of the Constitution. By Congress itself and by two-thirds of the states calling the Constitution amendment. Article 5, two-thirds of the states, which is 34, signs on the proposal to call the Article 5 convention. Then it takes three-quarters, 38, to ratify it. I hear people saying all these things about, well, you can't open them. Well, 13 states is not going to vote to do away with the 13th Amendment, I don't think. So if 13 states say we ain't going to do it, we ain't going to do it. And besides that, it's already, the process has where the delegates that each state send, I think they, each state is afforded one delegate, and they go there with a strict direction that they must follow, unless the states say they don't want to do it. So, no, you can't complain about these things, and you don't get in and do anything about it. And another thing, from Convention of Five, whatever your state is, like Convention, like Article 5 action in Louisiana, any state issue, whether it's constitutional carry in the state of Louisiana, whether it's preventing children from being alterly change with their sex without the parents' responsibility, whether it's forbidden entities to require you to have vaccinations to enter school or work on a job. Those are state issues.
Yep.
And Article 5 action inform here in Louisiana, the 43,000 people who signed the petition, that, look, this is action that we need for all of us to do. What is that action? You contact your state representative on any House bills. You contact your state representative, your state legislature, for any Senate bills. And many bills that have came out in the last year or two was pushed by those 43,000. And they made a difference. So sign the petition so that we can, we got 19, I think we have 20 states, we need 14 more. And hopefully we can get that done and get this thing changed. Federal government is way overreach. These agencies, yeah. AFT, FBI, way overreach. FBI comes to notify you. They're supposed to check in with the local sheriff, and then the local sheriff go out with them and notify you. And they should leave their guns at the station.
Yeah.
You were saying? Yeah.
Let me ask you, where, just in case people are listening on the program and watching in the chat room, if they want to, if there's a link for them to go to the Article 5 convention.
Yes, sir. They go to conventionofstates.com, all one word. Conventionofstates.com, all one word, and sign the petition. Then that goes to a central, which informs your state leaders on the topic, and they'll get in contact with you. They'll congratulate you, inform you of some other information that you can get involved in. You can be a volunteer if you want to, or you can just talk. There's a university that teaches you about how this convention, this Article 5 came into existence. And that, it too, is another one of those divine interventions, because they were about ready to convene the Constitutional Convention when Madison said, oh, wait a minute, we need something better than this. And then they came up with Article 5 for the people, because they had it for the Congress. But they said, no, we need the state legislatures, which is the people, to have the ability to make some amendments. That's how it came about.
And, yeah, that's a good way to really get involved, because some of us, we feel like we're overwhelmed. Well, what can I do? What can I do? What can I do? And this is a way to, so to speak, get your hands dirty in the whole thing. I guess dirty is a wrong analogy, but this is a way all of us can make a difference and can come in and actually effect real change. And I think this will have more of an effect of – you know, on the change in this country than even voting will have, you know. And if we all can do this and be willing to get our hands dirty and whatever, we can really affect real change at this level, you know, because this is something that the people can actually get involved in, you know, more than just voting. They can actually make get your voice heard. This is one way to get your voice heard, you know, even better than voting. So that's a good idea.
Well, yeah, that's the only way it's going to happen. If you can't have free and transparent ballots, if you can't have an Article 5, then the next thing you're going to have is people won't want to talk about, because these states are going to say no. They're going to flat out say, we ain't going to do it. You know, states got that power to do it now. Supreme Court don't make laws. The Supreme Court gives an opinion. State said, go pound sand. We ain't got to do it. It's unconstitutional.
That's right.
Congress, the courts, nor the president can't stop a Article 5 once it's called. It don't have nothing
to
do with it. So that's what needs to be done. Federal government has no business telling Texas or Louisiana that you need to get permits and pay fees before you can explore for natural resources and extract them from the ground. They don't have that authority in the Constitution. Federal government don't have no authority to own land unless the state leases land to the federal government. The Constitution says you can only have magazines, ports, and forts, like F troops. That's it. And people sit by and let all this stuff happen, like the Bungie. That wasn't the federal government's responsibility. They don't have no jurisdiction on that unless that state leased that land to them. And they're getting away with all kind of crap.
Yeah.
You live by two constitutions right now. One is the original Constitution.
Yeah.
The other is court presidents. And also agencies' rules, like the IRS rules, like the AFT, all these different rules on bump stops and the capacity of magazine. That's not your ability to put that in place. Those are rules. Those rules should be voted on by Congress and not laws.
That's right.
Supreme Court has no ability to enforce laws unless it's in certain cases.
That's right.
And people usually come and complain, and they listen to the complaint, then make a ruling. Either party don't have to live by it. In Ferguson, Eric Holder entered into a consent decree with Ferguson. Ferguson didn't have to live by that. During the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit, Arizona said, we ain't going to do it. Well, we're going to withhold your money. Well, you can't withhold from us what we don't give you to withhold from us. Congress people should be paid by the state that elected them. They shouldn't be working out of no kitty out of Washington, D.C. If you was elected by Alabama, and Alabama pays you, deposit your money in your salary into a Alabama bank. Then if you're concerned about this congressperson, a U.S. senator for the state of Alabama, is dealing in improprieties, and well, you can go and check the bank records. My goodness, where did you get this $5 million deposit?
Yep.
You can't do that now because it's in Washington, D.C.
Exactly.
So how you going to hold your congressperson, how you going to hold them accountable? You don't. All you do is vote for them and sit back and see what happens. You know, it reminds me of spin the wheel. What's that, Wheel of Fortune? They spin the wheel, stand back, and see what happens.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then you hit that bankrupt part. Like, oh, sorry.
This money that they've given to Israel, the Ukraine, Taiwan, is a bunch of bull crap.
Yeah,
you need to
yeah.
keep Americans' taxpayers in Americans' pockets. I wouldn't give
That's
Israel
right.
a dime. Surely I wouldn't be giving Ukraine a dime because it's nothing more but boomerang, comes back around into the campaign coffers. It goes to these AIPAC and these other agencies, these other NGOs and so on. Then they go into these Congress people's campaigns and in deposit say, look, here we're going to contribute to your campaign. Oh, yeah, that sounds great. What you want?
Yeah. And see, here's the thing, too. It doesn't matter which side you take. You know, the money going to another country when it could be more better utilized here, I understand why people will defend Israel and the Ukraine and stuff like that. But we shouldn't be sending money to any of these countries because we have problems here. It's just like I told my wife, sometimes her family members she's got family members in Liberia and they're always asking for money and stuff like that. I'm like, we're not made of money. Okay. We don't have a money tree back here. If we don't take care of home first, we will not be in a condition to help take care of anyone else. And that might sound selfish and whatever, but that's how it is. You know, you got to take care of yourself first. And all this money going out to these other countries, it's crazy. I mean, billions of dollars. And we're sitting here, we're complaining about the homeless on the streets of San Francisco, but yet and still we're sending billions of dollars to other countries to help them with their infrastructures. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, here's another thing. Can you name an enemy of yours? Suppose it was Hatfield and McCoy's, and you was part of the Hatfields. Matter of fact, I got a friend; his wife is part of those families. And I gave you was fighting them, and all of a sudden I gave you the McCoy's. I gave the Hatfields some F-15s. And some bombs and missiles. Now they're beating the hell out of you.
Yeah.
At what time did you start calling me a devil? Death to Bianchi. Huh?
I mean, for real.
In wars, they had ships carrying contraband across the waters. Germany was blowing up British ships. Why? Because the British ships were supplying the Allies that Germany was fighting with war material.
Yep.
Okay. So you're going to start calling death to Germany. During the Civil War, Russia put up blockades to prevent British goods from reaching the Confederacy. They did. Russia was an ally then. So they gonna say what? Death to Russia.
Yeah.
Lincoln prevented Confederate soldiers from receiving quinine. What's quinine? Well, it's used to fight malaria.
That's right.
And many of them died because they couldn't get that drug at that time. So what you think they're going to start saying? Death to Lincoln.
Yep.
And now it's Russia went around and helped out in San Francisco, especially the fire. They lost over 200 soldiers helping to fight the San Francisco fire.
Mm.
Germany helped supply Mexico when we had the Mexican-American War, when the state of Texas said, we're seceding from you, Mexico. We don't want to be part of you no more. Germany helped supply them with weapons and stuff. People don't talk about this stuff.
Yeah. And it's a no-win situation. You know, you're sending these people all this money, and then they're like, oh, thank you, you know. And then they say, you know, we can spend this whatever way we want to spend it, you know, the best way we see fit. And see, that's the problem about sending these countries all these millions and billions of dollars. You know, that's the problem I had with Obama sending that, what was it, $50 billion to Iran that time? You know,
that was Iran's
basically
money.
Had cash
they was holding. Yeah, that was Iran's money that they was holding. That was Iran's money that was being held up for some conspicuous. Like people say Iran be saying death to America. How in the hell you know? Do you speak Persian?
I'll be honest with you. I don't remember hearing them say death to, I don't know.
They said, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was said that in the speech. When it was further went over with people who knew what he was saying, he said, they didn't say that. You don't hear nothing else about that now.
Yeah.
So, no, that the United States should keep Americans' dollars in Americans. But here we had the Biden administration put in place that minimum wage be $20 an hour. So what good has it done?
Yeah.
When you raise minimum wage, everything else go up. You had the guy with the restaurant owner in California was selling hamburgers for $2.50. Well, what happens when you raise minimum wage up to $20? Well, you can't do it no longer.
That's right. I mean, that's
just
simple economics.
It takes 15 minutes to make a hamburger, he said. That's a quarter of a minimum wage hour. It's $5. And it takes more than one person. If one person cooking, somebody's got a bag and take the orders. So that's a dumb idea. Federal government has no business setting minimum wage, especially in private business. They get away with that stuff.
Yeah. And
Joe Biden
and the thing
has
about
no business paying off student loans.
Yeah. We let them get away with it, though. And that's the thing that bothers me. That's what I was talking about earlier in the show about, you know, Obamacare. You know, and I was bloviating about my inability to get health care now because I got to wait till November in order to enroll. And I'm like, my God, are you serious? You know, I want health care now, but I got to wait till November.
You know, has no business coercing people to get involved in any commercial products. Obama?
Not at all.
With his Obamacare saying that if women got in a tanning booth, they were supposed to be taxed higher. Unions who have their own personal, their own individual welfare programs, which include health and welfare, just because their plans pay for everything, and they pay for the plan by foregoing any contract raises on their check, they put it toward health and welfare. And he wanted to tax it as a Cadillac plan.
Yep.
In other words, if you go out and have your teeth pulled and it costs $45, they want to put a federal tax on it.
Yeah, they just want to get their sticky hands into everything, you know. And that's why I tell people, if the government would just get out the way,
this would
be a much
better way. They ain't gonna get out of the way.
Yeah,
they're not gonna do it voluntarily because it's too much money.
They're not gonna do it willingly. Yeah, they're not gonna do it willingly. That's the thing.
People that complain about them, you need to get off your butts and get involved in something that can make some positive change. Because if you don't do it these two ways, well, then the next way, you're going to have a civil reaction. You're going to have states that's going to close.
Yeah.
They're going to draw a ring around their border, or they're going to outline their borders, and they're going to say, we ain't going to do it. You got other callers. Go ahead and get them.
Oh, no, I don't have any other callers.
That's what's going to happen. Civil War, all those seceding states had to do was go on about their business. There's nothing Lincoln could have done.
Yeah.
Well, they made the mistake. They started their war at Fort Sumner. If, in fact, they did, it could have been a red flag.
Yeah. And I'm still trying to, deduce the complexities in the Civil War in that aspect, because I'm like, these states had the right to secede. They really did, And they still have that right today, And
your wife got a right to divorce you, don't she?
Yeah, hey, it's there.
Absolutely, Robert E. Lee, he performed impeccably in the Mexican-American War. He was an American soldier. They done what they had to do. How are you going to come back 40, 50 years later and then you're going to criticize them? That's a bunch of bull crap.
Yeah.
Leave them alone.
Yeah.
They need to be moralized.
Now they're trying to tear down all his statues and everything. I'm like, come on, y'all. Get out of here with that mess. Come on. But anyway, thank you for that Convention of States. Like I said, I'm going to try to get that out. I'm going to try to, when I go on my Facebook, I'm going to try to get that out there, sign the petition. They even got a pocket guide. They got a pocket guide, a PDF you can download and whatever, and tells you everything that they're all about and whatever. And I would advise everybody under the sound of my voice, if you're listening live or if you're listening in the archives, please look into that, because that's one way we all can get our hands into creating real change in this country. If you're sick and tired of voting for someone who doesn't want to keep their promises or anything like that, this is one way you can really exact real change in the country. So I really appreciate Pianki for bringing that up, because Sometimes you can get a little overwhelmed and you're like, oh, what can I do? I can't do this. I can't do that. I can't do this. Well, here's something that's real simple. Most of us have a computer, or we can get access to one. We got iPhones and everything and stuff like that. And we can pull this up and, we can exact real change by doing that. So I appreciate that. All appreciations to Pianki for bringing that up. So next weekend, I'm not going to have a program because it's the 1st of May. Let's see, the mainstream media owns the narrative, so things will not change but only get worse. That mainstream media controls. Okay, yeah. But still, we can still try to fight for change in that aspect as well. That might be a little bit harder. with the news media, because these guys, I don't know what to say. I really don't. And when Donald Trump said that they are the enemies of the people, I agree with him totally. That the news media is probably the number one enemy of the people. I could be wrong. If I am, you know, please correct me. But I think they're the ones that are the reason why everything is going the way it is, because the way they report what they don't report, what they will report, and everything. And, you know, when people point it out, they're sitting there like, hey, we're just trying to give you the news. No, uh-uh. You're trying to give us what you want us to believe. But anyway, next week I won't have a program, first of the month, so I won't be doing another program until, I don't know, the 5th of May, that Saturday? It'll probably be the 12th of May when I do another program. So, you know, get myself a little refreshed, get myself restarted and everything. But anyway, always appreciate Pianki coming on here and giving the information that he does, because, you know, he really does give a lot of valuable information on this program, you know. And here's the thing, too. You don't have to agree with every point that, you know, everyone's point of view to understand when they are telling the truth, you know. Because I don't agree with everything that a lot of people say and whatever, but when you can grab onto a fact or a truth that they mention, that, you know, give people credit where it's due. That's basically what I'm saying, you know. So, but anyway, I'm going to get ready, sign on out. Appreciate Pianki coming on, Flycatch, Four Persons, Sarge, all you guys. I really appreciate you all coming on and making the show what it is. And you all take care of yourself. Stay safe out there. This is Vincent E. Brown. I am signing off. And until the next time, I'll see you on the rebound. Y'all have a great 2 weeks.